a water pot. Now, when we get to the water pot, I'm going to try to quit. Now, it's kind of strange, I thought, in reading through the Bible that there's only three times that we have mention of water pots. All here in the book of John, two occasions in chapter 2, one here in chapter 4. John's the only writer that mentions a water pot, and I'm sure that that's significant. And as soon as I figure out the significance of it, I'll let you know. I'm sure there is somewhere some significance of it. But let's look at the beginning of this chapter to get up to the point of why I'm really enthused this morning about a water pot. If you go to John chapter 4, here Jesus Christ is doing his work and his ministry here. And if you remember chapter 3, if you remember in John chapter 3, when Jesus Christ had that conversation with Nicodemus, and he told Nicodemus that you must be born again, you must be born from above, and all of that discourse there about the spiritual birth and how that takes place, and how that if we are born of the Spirit and we are born again, it is because God has given us that birth. God has given us spiritual understanding. He's given us spiritual eyes. He's given us spiritual ear. It all comes from God. And he's had that conversation with Nicodemus. Well, here in chapter 4, he's going to have another conversation with a different type of person. And he begins chapter 4, and we see that it said the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John. And I only read that verse for one reason. I just wanted to point out one little thing. You know who are the ones that are baptized? Disciples. You're supposed to be a disciple before you're baptized. You're supposed to be a believer, a child of God, before you're baptized. That's part of your work. There are some people that believe that you don't become a child of God and heaven bound until you're baptized. This teaches me that it's disciples, those are already believers, that are baptized. And then he said in verse 3, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee. And it says he must needs go through Samaria. Now, if you look where Jesus Christ was, and you look where Galilee was, Samaria was between the two. But it said here that he must needs go through. It was more or less on the route, but I think the need here was not necessarily a geographical need. It was a spiritual need. There was a reason that he wanted to go to Samaria. He had a reason. There was something that the disciples had to learn, and there was something that we need to learn from what happened when he went to Samaria. And he came to this city in Samaria called Sychar, and it's near a place where they called what was called Jacob's Well there, as we read in verse 6. And it says that he was wearied with his journey. Now, isn't that strange that Jesus Christ, being God, 100% God, that he was weary? But he was weary because he was also 100% man. Jesus Christ had to become man in order that he might be qualified to save us. He had to become man in order to be our Redeemer. And he was 100% man. Instead, he came and sat there near the well, and it was about the sixth hour. Now, that was by our time. That was about noon, the heat of the day. So here it was at lunchtime. And it says in verse 7, there cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Now, I want to make a little comparison real quick between the one that Jesus Christ has just talked to back over in John chapter 3 and compared to this woman. Now, let's think about it and see which one that we would have wanted to talk to. Now, I, as a preacher, I want to look at this and see which one of these two I would want to preach to. Which one of these would we want to come and be a member of our church? All right, let's look at first in John chapter 3. Here's Nicodemus. In that account there, you read that Nicodemus here was a man that was coming, and he was of high rank, a man of great rank. He was probably a member of the Sanhedrin court. He has high reputation. He was probably pretty well off financially. But also notice that he came and sought out Christ. But he came at night. Now compare that to this woman here in John chapter 4. First off, instead of a man, it was a woman. Whereas Nicodemus was one of high rank, here was one of low rank, low esteem. Nicodemus was highly thought of. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. This woman, some have called a harlot. We know that she had five husbands, and the one that she'd had at this point, she wasn't married to. She was of low reputation. And whereas Nicodemus sought out Christ, here in this case, Christ seeks out this woman. And the one happened at midnight or at night. This one's getting ready to happen at noon. It's almost the opposite on every case, isn't it? Two different types of people, two different situations, two wholly different things happen here. And yet, what's the end result? Both of them end up serving the Lord. They both end up good. I like the way both of these accounts end up. Now, what that tells me is that the Lord uses different ways to work on different people. Different people need different things. Now, I wish, now this is really stupid to even say this, but I wish I had the knowledge that Jesus Christ had. He knew exactly what Nicodemus needed. He knew exactly what the woman at the well needed. And he gives us what we need to get us to the point where we need to be. Aren't we thankful for a God who has that wisdom and that knowledge and that love to give us what we need? So it says here in verse 7 of chapter 4, there cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Must have been poor. She couldn't have hired somebody to do it. Jesus saith unto her, give me to drink. Now Jesus Christ was alone. The disciples had went into the city to buy the meat, it says in verse 8, to buy the food that they needed for lunch and possibly for supper. They'd went into the city, left him alone there. Then in verse 9, then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest a drink of me, which is a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Now, to give you a little bit of history here, this area that's called Samaria, when the children of Israel, and you can find this back over in Joshua chapter 16 and Joshua 17, when the children of Israel come into the promised land, and when the land was divided out amongst all of the 12 tribes, this was the area that was given unto Ephraim and to the half-tribe of Manasseh. Now, have you ever wondered and thought about this? You know there was 12 children of Jacob, and we have 12 tribes. That makes sense, doesn't it? Everybody, every tribe gets one shot of land, one piece of land, right? Did it ever occur to you that the Levites didn't get any land? So how come we have 12 tribes if the Levites were mixed amongst all of them because they were the priesthood? Well, the reason being Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, each were treated as a separate tribe. This was their land here that was Samaria. And then as time went by, there was, as you know, of these 12 tribes, the 10 northern tribes had a little problem. They didn't like to go down to Jerusalem and worship. And they revolted. So it was 10 tribes in the northern and 2 tribes in the southern part, and they worshiped in different places. And we begin to see a little bit of a problem. And then you can go into 1 Kings, and it's about chapter 12, I believe it is, and you can see where King Jeroboam had brought a bunch of evil pagan worship into Samaria. And there began to be a problem between those in Samaria and those of rest of Israel. And then as time went on, and both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, as we know, were conquered and fell. This was long after the time of King David and King Solomon. And you remember how that there was the captivity in Babylon. And after a while there in Babylon, a remnant of the Jews got to go back to Jerusalem and to rebuild the city. And they were rebuilding that city, and they were rebuilding that temple. And the Samaritans came to them and wanted an alliance. And you know what the Jews said? Nope. Now, that's not exactly how they said it, but that's basically what they meant. We don't want your help. Get lost. Well, from that point on, they were enemies. Great problems between the two. And you know, it even seems in one point like Jesus Christ was kind of understanding that and going along with that, that the Jews and Samaritans, that they didn't like each other. Neither one of them liked the other. Because in Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus Christ sent out the 12, you remember what he told them? Matthew chapter 10 and verse 5 is what I want. He said, when he sent the 12 out, he said, go not into any of the into the Gentiles nor any of the city of the Samaritans. He said, don't go into them. He said, go into the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So Jesus Christ himself had told his 12 not to go into the city of the Samaritans. And now he is telling us here in John chapter 4 that he must go to Samaria. Does that sound a little strange? I mean, he told his disciples, don't go there. You know, they're not of us, is what it sounded like. But now he is saying, I got to go. I have a need in Samaria. I've got to go to this place. And so he comes there and he talks to this Samaritan woman. Now, there's three topics that I can see that Jesus Christ and this Samaritan woman talked about. Now, Jesus Christ, if you follow through the language here, he made seven statements to this woman. She had six responses. Now, you wonder why that he made seven statements and she just made six. Well, when it gets time for her seventh response, that's when we're going to find that water pot. All right, that I mentioned to start out with. So here she has responded to Christ. Why are you even talking to me? The Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Then in verse 10, Jesus said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou would have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. Now, at this point, we might not have a real good understanding what living water is, but you know what? I want some of it. Don't y'all? The woman said, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with. The well is deep. How are you going to get this living water? She didn't really understand that he was talking about something spiritual. Verse 13, Jesus answered, said unto her, whosoever drinketh of this water, speaking of the literal physical water, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. And that's true, isn't it? You know, I just took a drink of water out of that glass right there, but I'm pretty sure it won't be long. I'm going to need another drink. That's the way it is. But Jesus Christ said, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Now, Jesus Christ was not telling this woman how to be saved eternally, how to be born again. He already covered that topic back over in John chapter 3. What he's telling this woman is that this is a principle of grace, that if you'll have communion with me, if you're already born of the Spirit and you had this communion with me and you seek me, you're going to have grace in your lives. You're going to have this water springing up that's going to nourish you spiritually through difficult times, through good times, through bad times, through the high points and through the low points in your life. Now, isn't that true from our experience? That as we go through the difficult things in life, that what sustains us is that spiritual water that we get. Now, I know of people, and some of them that I would pretty sure that are children of God, that don't have good communion with God, don't have a good foundation, and they go through these difficult times, and they're dry and barren. They don't have that living water. Jesus Christ said, if you ask me, I would give you this water. Verse 15, the woman said unto him, give me this water. Now, that's a natural response, isn't it? Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. She still didn't understand the spiritual principle that Jesus Christ was bringing to her at this point. And then as Jesus Christ answered her, here his fourth response unto her, it's kind of an unusual little topic, but there's a reason. Jesus Christ now is having to tell her something to get her attention. Now, with Nicodemus over in chapter 3, he had to bring something unusual to that man to get Nicodemus' opinion, and that was the idea of the new birth, that you must be born again. But now look what he says to this woman to get her to understand. He said, go call thy husband and come hither. Now, doesn't that sound like a question that's just kind of off the wall? I mean, if I would have been talking to this woman in his situation, I wouldn't have had any clue that this would have been the perfect thing to get this woman's attention. But Jesus, knowing everything, knew exactly how to get to the root of her problem, to get her attention. And she said, I have no husband. And then Jesus Christ, with his infinite knowledge and wisdom, said, thou hast well said that thou hast no husband. For thou hast had five husbands, and whom thou hast now is not thy husband. Now, if I would have been in this situation, and I would have asked this question, and got this kind of response, you know, well, yeah, I've had five husbands, and yeah, I'm living with somebody now, I'm not married to, not my husband. I would have gone, whoops, what did I get myself into? You know, every once in a while I'll stumble like that and ask a question and get a response that really opens up something. And most of the time it's not something I want to open up. But here is exactly what needed to be opened up. Jesus Christ said, yes, you've had five. You've had five husbands. You're with somebody now who's not your husband. What was the woman's response? Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. I would have said the same thing. You know, to have that knowledge of her. What do you think that she felt at that point? What do you think that she felt that here was a man that she didn't know and she didn't think that knew her? And he come and he told her the very details of her life. She sees that he knows every single thing about her life. I wonder what she thought. This guy knows everything. I can't hide anything from him. But you know it's exactly the same for you and I. Jesus Christ knows everything about us. And what really scares me, not only does he know everything I've said, he knows everything I've thought. Now, y'all probably think I'm just a super nice guy. You know, I'm just this wonderful all-American guy. Now, ignore the fact that my family's laughing. All right? Y'all ignore that for just a moment. But I'm just like anybody else. I have wicked and evil thoughts. You know, there's sometimes I would just like to hit somebody over the head with a 2x4. You know, and the Lord knows that. Now, I'm not going to say if it's any of y'all. But anyhow, the Lord knows all of that. He knows that. Is there anything that we can hide from the Lord? No. But you know what's wonderful? Even with that knowledge, God still loves us. Even with that knowledge, God is still taking care of us. He's still blessing us and giving us all these abundant, wonderful things that we enjoy in spite of all of that. He knows it all about us. And then this woman, and I don't know if this was to get away from this idea, that this thought that the Christ had just brought up to her. She said, our fathers worshipped in this mountain. Speaking of that nearby mountain where they had set their altar up, and said, in this mountain, and you say Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Now she turns away from the bad real quick to get to another issue. But the issue that she had got to was very important. In fact, if you do a lot of the study, this was a lot of the contention between the northern tribes and the southern tribes is a place where we ought to worship. And Jesus Christ and his response. Now, by the way, when Jesus Christ responded to people, he was not politically correct. In verse 22, and I just love this because I like to be politically incorrect. And I just love verse 22. Where he told this woman, ye worship, ye know not what. Now, if I'd say something like that, you know what response I'd get? That's not nice. I mean, I've said things like that before and got that response. Ye worship what you don't know anything about. That's what he was saying. You don't have a clue what worship is about. That's what he was saying. Was he right? Certainly. He was right. You ever get that fear in your own life? That in your own worship? That the Lord may be saying, you worship what ye know not? Don't we need to examine ourselves, our own personal lives, so that we may worship the Lord properly? For he said here in verse 23, the hour cometh and now is here now, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. If somebody would ask you this morning, as you were out leaving the door to your house, heading for this place, and somebody was to ask you what you were going to do, you would probably say, either I'm going to church or I'm going to go worship the Lord. Isn't that right? Now, didn't we all think in our minds when we left this morning that we were going to worship the Lord? Isn't that the reason that we're here, is to worship the Lord? Now, I'm hoping some of you are saying, no, I just came for lunch. You know, that's a part of the service too, I think. You know, I just found out recently that the proper order to service is singing, prayer, preaching, and eating. I always thought, you know, we just had the first three, but I understand now that you got to include that fourth one to have a proper service. But anyhow, we're here to worship and serve the Lord. What does he say? We've got to do it in the Spirit. In the Spirit. Is it important to worship in the Spirit? I hope and pray that the Spirit is with us here this morning. I was kind of tickled yesterday at the meeting at Muleshoe, and I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's pastor of the church at Littlefield, and I had invited a couple of people to come and be with us at church today, and they all said, no, I'm going to church at Littlefield, and I told Brother Scott that, and And he was just joking, but he made a good point. He said, you can take all the people as long as you don't take the Lord. He recognized the fact that we need the Lord in our service, don't we? We need him. And if I don't have the Lord and the Spirit of the Lord upon me when I'm trying to preach the gospel, you know, it's going to be a long, boring lecture, because that's all it would be. And believe me, I know. And I've, you know, y'all think it's hard listening to a boring sermon, you ought to try preaching one. You know, if you don't have the Spirit with you, that's tough. I guarantee you. You got to have the Spirit. But what else do you need? You need the truth. Where are you going to get the truth at? The Lord's given us the truth. We have it right here. We need to be worshiping the Lord in spirit and in truth, doing things His way. Now, let me just make one other little point about the worship service. You know what's important about this worship service? When we meet together in spirit and in truth, that's what's important. If I would have insisted this morning, and y'all would have finally given in, that instead of meeting here in the sanctuary, we're going to meet out in this cotton field out here north of the building. Now, I know it'd probably been hard to convince y'all to do that, but if I would have convinced y'all, could we have had a church service with the presence of God in that cotton field rather than here? It's not this building that's important. What's important is the congregation, the church, all of us are meeting together with the Lord. You know, so often we get wrapped up in the building. I am thankful for the building that we have. This is one of the nicest Primitive Baptist buildings that I've been in. And I'm thankful for it. But what's important is when we're meeting together in the Spirit and the truth is being proclaimed. And that's what Jesus Christ was teaching this woman here at the well. It's not the place that's important. You know, I thought about something the other day. I just kind of thought that. You remember back in the Old Testament when they built the tabernacle in the wilderness? You know, if you read that account there, and they had those boards set up, you know, and they had the skins over the boards and cover them. They had all the different things. You can go back and read all of that. Do you think that that was very attractive? Now, I don't really think it was all that great. I mean, there was parts of it that might be okay, but just compare that to Solomon's temple. Now, would that tabernacle back in the wilderness be very attractive? You remember what the Jews did after they came back, after the Solomon's temple had been destroyed? And they built another temple on the same site. You remember what those old ones, the seasoned citizens said when they come back in, the ones who had seen the original temple and they saw the rebuilt one, you remember what they did? They cried, saying, this is awful. Solomon's temple was a thing of wondrous beauty. Compare it now. Let me bring this thought to you. Who designed the tabernacle? God. Who designed Solomon's temple? Solomon. Which one do we think is beautiful and wonderful? The one that Solomon had. You see, what the point I'm trying to get is not the material things in this world that's important to God. It's meeting together in spirit and in truth. God is a spirit. We must worship Him in spirit and truth. In verse 25, the woman answered this comment and said that I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When He is come, He will tell us all things. She already had a little bit of spiritual understanding, didn't she? She knew something. She didn't have the whole picture yet, but she's ready to get a big part of it. And then Jesus Christ made His seventh statement in response to her. He says, I that speak to thee am he. Now, I just think about this sometimes and laugh. You remember all of those intelligent theologians? Now, if you want to know what that means, is that means smart preachers. All of these smart preachers that existed in this time, they kept asking Jesus Christ the question, if thou be the Christ, plainly tell us. Well, you don't get much plainer than this, do you? If you're going to misunderstand this, you've got to have help. It's pretty plain, isn't it? I mean, it's real plain. I'm he. I'm the Messiah. That's pretty plain. I am he. He is the one that has all this truth. Now, what I want to think of now, and we're getting close to that water pot, and I know you are looking forward to it because that's when I said I was going to quit. All right? We're getting close to the water pot. All right? Here, he made this seventh statement. She doesn't respond. She doesn't speak. At about the time that this happened, his disciples come back. You remember they had went into town to buy food for lunch, possibly for supper also. And now they were coming back out of the city. And here they come and they see Jesus Christ talking to this Samaritan woman of questionable reputation. Now, I don't know that they knew that she had a questionable reputation. And when they get back, they do the strangest thing that you've ever seen from the mouth of a preacher. I mean, they were all preachers. You know what they said? Nothing. That's kind of strange for preachers, isn't it? Right? They said nothing. I mean, and it even mentions that here. And says in verse 27, they marvel, he talked with the woman, yet no man said, what seekest thou, or what talkest thou to her? Nobody asked Christ a question or asked her a question. They stayed silent. Now, I'm going to skip 28 because I told you I was going to quit at verse 28, and I'm not through yet. So we're going to skip 28 and come back to it, all right? Now, this woman had went into the city and told the men of that city, come and see a man that's told me everything that I've ever done. Is not this the Christ? So those men of the city, Samaritans, you remember the Samaritans, the ones that the Jews hate? These Samaritans, the ones that the Jews call dogs? Here they were coming out of the city. Why were they coming? To hear the truth preached from the mouth of Jesus Christ. They were to hear the gospel preached. That's what they were coming for. Now, the reason I want to mention that, I want you to compare this Samaritan woman of low reputation to the 12 apostles that had been into the city. She was in the city, they had been in the city. 12 of them had been there. How many people did they bring back? These 12 preachers went into the city. They came back. How many did they bring back to hear the gospel preached? Zero. Here's this woman, poor woman. How many did she bring out to hear the gospel preached? A whole bunch. Now, who's doing the better job of evangelism? Who's doing the better job of preaching and spreading the gospel? It was this woman, wasn't it? Now, the reason I want you to understand that, I don't care where you've been. I don't care what you've done. I care where you're at now and how you're serving the Lord. That's what's important. And if you're sitting in your pew this morning, or I'm standing here and we think, how can I ever be of service to the Lord? You don't know what I've done in the past. Well, you don't know what I've done in the past. We don't know what any else have done in the past. But we have an example here, this Samaritan woman. We can be a great benefit to the Lord, can't we? Don't let anything that's ever happened in the past hinder your service to the Lord today. She was a great benefit. All right, let's get to verse 28. We're all looking forward to verse 28. Verse 28. The woman then left her water pot. They said, what in the world does that need any talking about? You remember in the first part of this account here in John chapter 4, this woman had brought this water pot, and it doesn't mention the water pot to start, but she had it. She brought this water pot to the well. She brought that to carry her water in, to carry what she had come to do, to come to get. And if you will, that was her tool of her trade. That was her instruments of her service. I want you to think of that for just a moment. Rather than in a natural sense, I want you to think of that in a spiritual sense. She came to that well, came to that place with a pot to carry her works, her idea of worship, their system of worship that the Samaritans had. She came with her ideas and her works. And isn't there so many people in this world today that come to church with their idea of what worship should be, their idea of service, their idea of what it takes to get saved and go to heaven? So many people are preaching a doctrine and a gospel that you've got to do this or that. You've got to bring a pot, a water pot full of certain works in order to go to heaven. You've got to bring your own works to be acceptable unto God. And we're all guilty of that from time to time. We're bringing something to get water, God's blessings in, and we're bringing our own works, our own abilities, our own knowledge, our own wisdom to get it. And she brought that to the well. But when she got there, and she talked to Jesus Christ, she found out what true worship was, and she discovered something. That all of these things of this world, the natural water, all the wondrous things that we put great emphasis on today, wasn't worth anything. She realized her own worship and her own efforts in the system of worship of the Samaritans was empty and worthless. She left that all behind. After talking to Jesus Christ, she could leave saying, I'm nothing. I have nothing. All of my ideas are worthless. What I need is Jesus Christ. What I need is the living water. And you can't get that living water in an earthen water pot. When it says here that she left her water pot, you know what I see? She left behind herself and saying, I'm going to go serve Jesus Christ. I'm going to give Him all the glory. I'm going to give Him all the praise, because what I have in this world and what I will have and enjoy in the world to come, it's not what I got in my own water pot. It all comes from Jesus Christ. Let us all this morning leave our water pot and give Jesus Christ all praise, honor, and glory. May God bless you.